If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your real ID at tsa.gov/real ID. That's tsa.gov/real ID. Or visit your local DMV. And then you'll be cleared for takeoff.
This is Jordan Klein with Fireside Paranormal Podcast, and you're listening to Ghosts in the Valley Podcast with Al Cooley.
Your host Al Cooley, and welcome to Ghost in the Valley podcast. Today I have Stan Gordon on the show. Stan is an author. He has worked in films and radio, podcasting, TV. Stan has been everywhere. Stan Gordon has been tracking down and investigating UFO and cryptid sightings since 1969. And I'll be right back with my conversation with Stan Gordon right after these brief messages.
Are you looking for a new book to read? Check out my newest book, An Awakening, by Wendy M. Cope, last name spelled K-O-K. Basically, it's a story of good versus evil, and these things slowly start taking over the residents of this small northern town in Neillsville, Wisconsin, and I would love it if you would read it. My books are available on Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Book Baby Bookshop, everywhere really, and you can find me at WendyMCopeAuthor.com.
Today I have Stan Gordon on the show. Stan is an author, a UFO and cryptid researcher, a historian, an entrepreneur, and also has worked in films and radio. Since 1969, Stan has been tracking down and investigating UFO and cryptid sightings. In 1969, Stan set up a UFO hotline that was very successful. We're going to talk about all of this and so much more. Welcome to the show, Stan.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you know, let's go back to the beginning, back to this crazy journey you've been on. When did this start, you know, with your interest in UFOs and cryptids?
Well, I've been doing this now for over 63 years, believe it or not. I've never seen a UFO or a Bigfoot, but I started this when I was a 10-year-old kid, just interested in science and electronics, and happened to be tuning around the AM radio dial one night, and I heard a radio show talking about strange occurrences. They were talking about flying saucers and ghosts and weird things, and I was a curious kid, and I wanted to know if they were true or not, so I began to go to the local Greensburg Library and read all the books they had on the subject. I began to cut articles out of the newspapers, made scrapbooks, and then I was 16 years old when the incident happened near Kecksburg in 1965. I've been out in the field ever since 1965 investigating these cases.
The UFO group you put together in 69, were these all volunteers?
Oh, yeah, this was all volunteer. I mean, we all had full-time jobs. It was actually 1970 that founded the first of the three groups that would go on for many, many years, and they were all volunteer. We all did it out of our own pockets. We all did it out of our own time. Yeah, it was an amazing time. The groups were kind of unique. The first group was called the Westmoreland County UFO Study Group. It was a small group here in the greater Pittsburgh area, and by 1973... we had extended to cover the whole state of Pennsylvania, and I had it set up so we could respond to cases 24 hours a day. And in many, many incidents, we did. We were on the scene with these incidents sometimes within minutes to hours after they occurred. And that was pretty amazing because of what would happen in 1973 when we had the biggest UFO and Bigfoot outbreak in history here in Pennsylvania. We were really surprised because we were beginning to receive a lot of referrals from a news media, law enforcement across the state, and we were very, very busy. But we were lucky that we were pretty well organized when this major event occurred, and we were able to document these cases.
I think that you being an electronics geek, you know, actually helped you out a lot with these investigations and with your investigators that you put together, you know, because I think, you know, personally, I think you were way ahead of your time.
Well, you know, yeah, I did with electronics and that. I set up a two-way radio dispatch system and a very elaborate communication center in my home. So a number of the investigators around this area, we were able to radio dispatch them out to some of the sighting areas, which was very good. And then actually, as time went on, years went on, there was we had some equipment used out in the field, but again, it's, you know, that was the early days, and there was some equipment we couldn't buy, so we built our own equipment, such as basic night vision equipment, but it was pretty decent for back in early 1970s. And so that came in very handy, and a lot of the guys in my group, the men and women in my group, I mean, there were a lot of special electronic specialists, and we had physicists and chemists, and I mean, you name it, we had people from all types of scientific and professional fields volunteering in the group, so all these people really helped out.
And you're from the Greensburg, PA area, correct?
That's correct. I'm still here.
Yeah, there's a lot of sightings. I mean, I get reports all the time with stories, but you know, unfortunately, a lot of these people that want to tell these stories, whether it be a haunted house or a UFO or a cryptid, they don't really want to come on the show to talk about it. You know, they're labeled crazy, or even though I wouldn't put their name on here. But, you know, I see that, yeah, the Greensburg and Westmoreland County and Chestnut Ridge, that's all really active.
Yeah, well, if you get any good calls from this area, tell them to give me a call. I'm the same way. I've been doing this for years and years. I deal with these cases almost daily from current and past reports. And we get a lot of activity here, but I get cases from all over Western PA, especially in the Southwest region. Last year was one of the most interesting, one of the most unusual years for phenomena here in Pennsylvania, with many, many just very detailed reports, not just lights in the sky, but many low-level incidents. We had daylight Bigfoot encounters. There was a lot of activity going on. So, yeah, and the people call in from all walks of life, many are professionals, and yes, they don't want their names used, which I don't use. That's just how it is. You know, people want to find out what they saw. A lot of witnesses never believed that these things could occur until they had their own encounter. And so many of these people, it was a life-changing experience. And I'm still in touch with some witnesses I knew 30, 40 or more years ago. And even today, their lives were changed by what happened to them. So, yeah, whatever's going on out there, it's very strange and very unusual.
Let's get into the Kecksburg crash in 1965 in Kecksburg, which is located, what, outside of Pittsburgh?
Yeah, it's about, depending which way you travel, it's 30-some miles outside of Pittsburgh here in Westmoreland County in Mount Pleasant Township. I was 16 years old when the incident happened, and I started documenting. I was breaking on the news that evening around the Pittsburgh area. Over the years, I've tracked down hundreds of people who were involved in the case. I started writing down the information that evening and stayed up all night almost, I'm sure, trying to write out all the details, and started gathering information the next day and went to the local newsstand first thing in the morning to see if it would be in the news. And, wow, I was amazed. Here, all the local papers, Pittsburgh Press, Post-Gazette, the Greensburg Tribune Review, it was a front page headline story. And it made national news, and it was a major story, and it's a very, very intriguing case. We could talk for days about what I've uncovered about Kecksburg, and it's an amazing story. Whatever, there's no doubt in my mind that something did indeed fall from the sky and was apparently recovered by the military. What it was, well, we can speculate forever because there's so much data about it. It's a very, very interesting account, regardless of what it was.
Yeah, I picked up your DVD. I met you last year at the Kecksburg Festival, UFO Festival in Kecksburg.
Yes.
UFO crash, Kecksburg, the untold story. Man, I thought that was really, I mean, everything I've been investigating on this crash, you're right spot on.
Well, I appreciate that. I actually won an International Film Award for it, and I did that in that way, and that was many years ago. And I wanted to document it because, I mean, those are just some very good witnesses, and I've interviewed hundreds, and you know, we all know that we're not always going to be here, and I wanted these people to be able to tell their story in detail, and that's why I did that. And so many of those people now are gone, and I wanted them to be able, for historical sake, to be able to tell the truth about what they experienced that day. And I think you saw in there, these were very, very credible people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. While I was in Kecksburg, I actually talked to a few people around the area. I wish I would have recorded it, but I didn't. But, you know, people that knew people, like their mother or father that was there when the crash happened. They didn't actually witness the crash, but they had, like, the men in black at their house. You know, so that was really interesting. And I really wish I would have got their names. But, you know, it was so busy that weekend. I was like, my wife and I were like, met so many interesting people, you know, from the wineries to the Kecksburg town itself and the crash site. You know, everything was just, you know, I was kind of like a kid in a candy store because I never heard of this incident until probably a few months before we went to the festival.
Well, as you know now, it's a pretty well-known case. You know, there's still people out there who were involved in it, and I'm sure, and I know this from different people who told me that they still have friends and neighbors who were involved in it when they were young kids, and they still never come forward for different reasons. So everybody's different. Many, many people have come forward over the years, but a lot of them still don't want any publicity. And what was so amazing to me over the years I did this is that some of these were neighbors of neighbors, and they were confirming other people's stories without these witnesses even knowing it. And I was getting these little details. I'm a detail person. I want these people to be able to tell me important little details. And that's something that really was able to convince me that they were involved, because they talk about landmarks. They talk about certain features they saw, certain personnel or equipment they saw that night. And that's what all led to the story. I mean, the basic story is this very briefly. This is about 4:47 p.m. It's just getting dark in the greater Pittsburgh area. Multiple reports from the tip of Ontario, Canada, over Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania of this brilliant fiery object coming in. And it was around that time that this brilliant object came in over the greater Pittsburgh area. And the radio and TV stations, the newspapers, the police departments were just jammed with reports. Some people thought it was an aircraft that was on fire. As it was breaking on the news that evening, you know, people were calling in, and then it was starting to hit the news that evening. What we later found out was that apparently whatever that object was, it fell into a wooded ravine in the wooded area outside of Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. And what made the story even more fascinating was, as I'm listening to a radio show in Pittsburgh on KDK-TV, one of the reporters at that time broke in with a live report that the military was arriving in the Kecksburg area to search for an unidentified flying object. And I remember me as a kid, I'm running back and forth between the black and white console TV and the radio trying to get the latest reports. I wasn't driving yet. I wasn't able to get out there. And I'm writing all the information down as it's occurring. But then over the years, I tracked down hundreds of people who were involved. I tracked down many witnesses who saw the object in the sky. I tracked down witnesses who actually went down into the woods right after the object fell. And that's what's really intriguing, because one, independent witnesses unknown to each other took me deep into that wooded area to the exact location without knowing it. And that was so intriguing, because we didn't have an eyewitness till 1987. We knew the general wooded area where it came down, but it wasn't until 1987 that we had an actual eyewitness who could confirm where it was. And then, again, the next year we got an anonymous tip, another person seen it. We tracked him down. He took us down to the site from a different entrance into the wooded area, took us to the exact same location that another person did. Previous to that, and none of them knew this, one of my teams and I were down that wooded area searching for evidence, and we found what appeared to be a trajectory of tree damage. We found a series of trees with the tops broken off, some knocked down in the same direction. And we had a pretty good idea. We thought something may have fallen, but until 1987, we didn't have an eyewitness that could pinpoint the area. And it was right in the area where we felt something fell. But eyewitnesses located who saw the object come in early that afternoon said that they came across this large metallic acorn-shaped object semi-buried in the ground, approximately 10 to 12 feet in length, about 8 to 10 feet in diameter, shaped like a big metallic acorn, kind of an off-gold bronze color, big enough for a human to stand inside of. And on the raised-up back of the object, it had these strange markings that looked more like some type of ancient symbols. And then, of course, what made the story very intriguing was that within a relatively short time after it fell, locals began to report seeing military vehicles in the area. And as the evening went on, more and more military showed up, and I interviewed many local residents who saw them. I interviewed reporters who were on the scene that night, some who either saw the equipment or interacted with the military. I talked to law enforcement people, and amazing, amazing story, whatever this thing was. And this object, whatever it was, what we did not know at the time was this thing came in over the greater Pittsburgh area, moved out in the West Warren County, moved over to the city of Greensburg, moved out roughly out towards Route 30 east, made a turn to the south, was seen by witnesses all along the small communities out there, went out to the mountains of Laurelville, kind of hesitated, began to track back to outside of Kecksburg, made another turn and went down into the woods. And those who saw it go down, and some people had this thing come right over top of their head. So some of these people were not seeing just a fiery object, a fireball. They were seeing what appeared to be a structured object engulfed in flames, moving very slowly. And the people saw it go down said it did not come down at a high rate of speed. It came down almost like it was making a controlled landing. But there was no parachute seen at the scene. There were none on the ground. And the witnesses then, right after it fell, they came across this object semi-buried in the ground.
A lot of reports it could have been a Russian space capsule.
There have been multitudes of theories from the time it happened. And the one theory for years and years was that it was Cosmos 96, which was a Soviet Venus probe that has a technical malfunction, and it re-entered the atmosphere over Canada around 3:18 a.m., interestingly on the same date. And without getting into all the technical stuff, there's been a lot of investigation done. There was a big investigation done with investigative reporter Leslie Kane and with the Sci-Fi Channel years and years ago, and they came up with a lot of good information, which pretty much ruled out Cosmos 96.
What really interested me about that whole case was it kind of just reminded me so much of the incident in my own county, in Trumbull County, Ohio. You know, that happened in 1994 when a UFO was spotted over our county and chased into Pennsylvania. It was on December 14th, I believe, 14th or 15th of 94. And it actually made the Art Bell Show in 99, Coast to Coast Radio. I just had the dispatcher on my show just recently, was on duty that night when all these calls are coming in. What's interesting is, in both cases, Kecksburg and Trumbull County, is the cover-up. And I believe there's a huge cover-up on that Kecksburg incident as well.
Oh, there's no doubt there was a lot more to the story than we know. There's no doubt about that. Hopefully we'll have some answers to it.
In my county, there were, you know, the newspaper was there, the TV was there, over 10 different law departments were there, and yet nothing was in the papers or the news the following day. I had a friend of mine at work with me back then. They came to work and said it was right over his car, and we all thought he was crazy. At the time, I wasn't really into UFOs at that time. And it wasn't until like 5 years later, was on our Art Bell Show, that everything he had told me was on that Art Bell Show. Everything.
Well, when you get a chance, look up the Ravenna, Ohio UFO chase, April 17, 1966, and look then at the similarities of the report.
Right. They're both real similar. The one in 66, the one in 94. They both started in Portage County, Ohio, which was a Ravenna case, and then the Trumbull County, which was the one I'm talking about. Yeah, they're very similar in case, with the police chasing that into almost the same route into Pennsylvania. But they're saying that the Close Encounters movie was actually based off of that Ravenna case.
And Ohio has a lot of reports, too. I spoke last year at the Ohio MUFON conference and talked to quite a lot of people who had sightings down there. And, yeah, they get a lot of reports as well, just like we here do in Pennsylvania. And that's amazing. And I do recall some details of where we talk about it. You know, I worked on thousands and thousands of cases here in Pennsylvania, but I remember when you said Trumbull County, I do remember something about that, yeah. And I can tell you, over the years, I've interviewed many police officers from many different departments and state police who have had these encounters. And these are very credible people who have, just like so many of the other witnesses, but of course, most of them want no publicity whatsoever.
It's hard to fathom that you have reputable people there witnessing this, and yet they all have to put in their police report the next day that it was a weather balloon. These are really reputable people I'm talking about.
Right. And the same thing here. Many of the cases I've investigated, even in the last couple of years, I mean, we're talking large solid objects very low to the ground. Sometimes there's various type of electromagnetic effects involved or animal reactions involved. And, I mean, I was involved in some amazing cases, which most people probably never have heard of before. One case always stuck out, and there's many of them, but September 3rd, 1987, this was on a busy Route 30, four-lane major highway outside of Greensburg, which was then Green Gate Mall area. And early that evening, you had multiple witnesses, including law enforcement, to see this huge, probably 300-foot-long, metallic, kind of cigar-shaped object, completely silent, multiple lights on it, only about 300 feet off the ground, moving along the high power tension lines, moving across Route 30. And as it moved horizontally across the sky slowly over the power substation, this huge object turned vertical in the sky and all the power in the area went out. And that's the short part of the story.
I'll be back after these messages when I continue my conversation with Stan Gordon.
Hello, and welcome to Chit and Chat, a podcast for encouraging others. Who needs encouraging? Everyone needs some encouragement. I reach out to musicians, nonprofits, comedians, whoever I can find to come on here and share encouragement to you. Why? Why not? We live in a negative world, negative news, negative social media half the time. This podcast is about encouraging others, encouraging one another. So why not share encouragement to our friends, family, coworker? You know what? Encouragement is contagious. Let's spread it to one and all, to all parts of the world. This is Chit and Chat.
From your book, Creepy Cryptids. That's a really good book, matter of fact. I just finished. Well, I'm almost finished with that, about three quarters of the way through. There was an incident in there that took place in 1983 in Blair County. A woman's car was lifted approximately 3 feet off the ground on the one side, and then it dropped her back down. She was banged up, I guess, pretty badly, and dropped her back down. But it says here that a UFO flies off, and yet she claims that she doesn't believe in aliens.
Well, she didn't believe it till after she had the experience. many people don't believe these type of things are real until they have their own personal encounter.
Oh, okay.
And she was a very, very credible person. I remember, we interviewed her. There was a lot of investigation done. I had a lot of correspondence with her. She was very, very credible. And that was a very interesting case where the object came from the right side of the field, came over the car, lifted the car sideways up, and she fell across in the passenger side and got the car back down. It was a very, very intriguing case.
Yeah, I really liked that case, but I was just curious, how if she's seen a UFO and it picks her car up and slams her back down, I mean, what was it,
Yeah, well, again, it's very, very common that many people, they change their minds pretty quickly after they have their own experiences.
We know that the Pentagon recognizes the military's involvement in pursuing these UFOs and these UAPs, as they now call them, the UAPs. Mm-hmm. But there was an incident that happened, I believe it was outside of Latrobe, PA. Two jets maybe shot down a UFO.
Oh, that was quite a while back. Yeah, and I'm just going from memory. I have to go back in so many cases. But yeah, there was it was outside of Latrobe, and there were several witnesses observed an object in the sky, as I recall. I think it was more than one object, as I recall. And you had a couple of military jets, they believed, came into the area and were circling around, and they believed that the one, they weren't sure if it hit it or if it fired something on it. It was far, far in the distance. They thought it was very, very interesting, and they were pretty certain they were military jets.
Yeah, because in the book it says they flew back from the direction they came from.
Yes, yes.
Objects seemed to fall, into the woods or out of sight.
Right, right. And they were a pretty good distance away. But, yeah, I mean, over the years we've heard stories of military jet pursuits over Pennsylvania, going back to probably at least 1980s. I've heard some of those reports and some of them since then, but nothing in more recent years that I can think of in this area.
Yeah, I've been investigating paranormal for over 40 years, but I love when I come across stuff that I never heard of before, in your book, again, from your book, Creepy Cryptids. I encourage everybody out there to pick up this book. It's awesome. I believe it's book four in your case series.
Yeah, actually, it's my newest book. It's called Creepy Cryptids and Strange UFO Encounters of Pennsylvania. It gets into the Chestnut Ridge. It gets into the the small spheres of light low to the ground have been coming close to people, and so many amazing cases just last year, which are not in this book. Big, very close Bigfoot sightings, all kind of strange creature reports. But the book is available now on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com, along with my other books.
Yeah, in that book you had mentioned the mini UFOs. And that's the first time I heard of a mini UFO.
Well, they're really, really intriguing. And I would recommend, I just put a large report out from the incidents from last year, 2022. And it's on my website now, stangordon.info, so you can read it, or your listeners can read it. It's pretty long and detailed. It goes into some of the strangest cases people probably have ever heard with these things. But these mini UFOs, as I've called them for years, I started hearing these reports back in the 1960s. And these are really interesting reports because these are objects that are not high in the sky. They are very low to the ground. Sometimes reports that I'm actually on the ground in daylight. But what's intriguing is they range anywhere in size from a few inches in diameter, like oversized fireflies. Most of them are around the size of maybe a golf ball or a softball or maybe a foot or two in diameter. They're generally spherical, but not always. Sometimes they're just globes of luminous, bright colors. In some cases, though, they look solid and metallic. But over the years, I've had reports of these things actually pacing vehicles. I've had reports of these things entering people's homes and cars through open windows. We've had reports of them now inside of people's homes. We've had reports of them actually just moving in front of people's windows or tapping on windows of homes. And just some really amazing cases in the last year. Where do you think we're very close in daylight?
Yeah, you just sent me that today, some information from that site that where I'm going to list in my links below. Just over 3 months ago, a small sphere appears inside a house in Westmoreland County. The sphere was about, it says in there, a foot and a half in diameter. My thing is, how in the world does this thing get inside the house?
Well, we've had reports. I've talked to people now, not only from Pennsylvania, but around the country, with similar type of reports. I mean, here's really what's interesting. So I think you're talking about that report that happened in October of last year.
Yes.
And it was a few days before, for example, one of my research associates, Jim Brown up in Fayette County, which is a very active area for all kind of anomalies, morning of October the 8th of last year. This is early morning, around 6 o'clock in the morning. It's very cold outside. It's under 40 degrees. And this man apparently decided to get the newspaper. He decided he just had his pajamas on, the slippers, and was walking out to the box, I think about 50 feet away, to the paper box. And that's when he observes this ball about 10 to 12 inches in diameter that was just a bright ball of glowing white light. And it's between him and the paper box. And the next thing he remembered was he got extremely tired, and around 7 o'clock in the morning, his wife was looking for him, and she finds him sound asleep on the porch outside in his pajamas in that cold weather. He was sound asleep, said it was hard for him to awaken, and all he remembered was that being near that small sphere of light that was making slow circular motions, and he got very tired. Now, here's what's really intriguing. So a few days later, 3 days later, in the Laurel Highlands area, so this is between the Chestnut Ridge and close by into the Laurel Ridge, which are very active areas for UFOs, Bigfoot sightings, all type of anomalies, many type of anomalies. So this woman is in her home. She has one of these older homes with the big high ceilings. About 2:30 in the morning, she gets up to go to the restroom, comes out, and about 5 feet away in her living room, she sees this very blue sphere about a foot and a half in diameter. And it looks like there's some type of like a gray swirling mass inside of that object. She said it was something like one of those old lava lamps. It was completely silent. She remembers she took one step towards the sphere. She said she felt like a tingling sensation. She said it reminded her like if you got like a pre-jolt of electric when you're near an electric fence. And she said the object she saw for about 10 seconds, she suddenly became very, very sleepy and went immediately to bed. And she said the next day, she was very sluggish and groggy for hours, but she said, this is completely not like me. She said, I'm an insomniac. She said, I just don't fall asleep like that. And why that happened, she has no idea. So here you have two really interesting cases where people were very close to these small spheres, and they both reported the same physiological effect. And then in the last couple of years, there have been several other low-level UFO encounters, not with just the balls of light, but larger solid objects seen at low level. I've had reports on where people reported like a slight electrical shock when they were in the vicinity of these objects. So that's kind of intriguing.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about Chestnut Ridge.
Well, the Chestnut Ridge is a little less than 100 miles long. It stretches through Westmoreland, Fayette, and Indiana County in southwest Pennsylvania, and it goes down into West Virginia, about a few miles outside of Morgantown, West Virginia. I've been investigating those cases up there since the late 60s, when I first heard about it and began investigating cases up there. It is probably one of the most active areas along that ridge, and there are certain areas along there that's more than active, especially out here in Westmoreland County along the Derry side of the ridge, and the Fayette County, very, very active with reports every year, including last year. We had amazing cases. This past November, up right on the border between Westmoreland and Indiana County, an area that's had a lot of history of Bigfoot sightings. I interviewed this woman, this witness, a short time after it happened on that same day. She was on their property. They're deep in the woods, up in the ridge area. She came out of a building just as the sun was coming up, and she noticed out of the corner of her eye some motion. She turns and looks, and she says this thing was easily 9 foot tall, covered with gray hair, carrying a deer over its shoulder. She said she thinks she kind of must have frightened it, and it made one loud grunt when it saw her, and they had eye contact for a short time. Then it turned and walked off with the deer into the field, then into the woods and gone. We've had other similar cases last year. We've had Bigfoot sightings reported every year here in Pennsylvania, especially the southwest region of the state, every year since 1973.
Yeah, that's active. I mean, your state is very active on Bigfoot. Another case that, you know, came out of Westmoreland County, I believe, was the, you know, you were talking about Bigfoot, the spotting of Bigfoot approximately 11 feet tall. It just, you know, it seems to me like a lot of strange activity, you know, with UFOs and Bigfoot, and what's the other one, the Thunderbird?
Yeah, we've got many different types of cryptids. So when we talk about cryptids, we're talking about creatures that people report seeing, but which science has never confirmed actually existing. The Thunderbird phenomenon, you probably may not have gotten that far into the Creepy Cryptids book yet, but all my books talk about Thunderbird sightings, too, over the years. I've interviewed many, many people who have seen them, including some very experienced people who are very familiar with the bird species of Pennsylvania, and they were just shocked by what they saw, because what they saw is not supposed to exist. It's very difficult to judge altitude and size as it is with UFOs. When you're looking at a huge flying creature in the sky, it's very hard to judge exactly how big they are. However, we have other instances where these huge flying creatures were low to the ground or actually on the ground. So we've had some incidents where these creatures were on the road eating roadkill with their wings completely open so they could get a pretty good idea. And there was one case, and actually it was in neighboring West Virginia, a fellow I interviewed back in 2017, I believe it was. It was a two-lane road, and the fellow was riding down the road, and he had to hit his brakes real hard because here's this huge, giant bird. It was as tall as his vehicle. It was staring at him. He was staring at it. He got a very good look at this thing. Now, this was a two-lane road, and this thing was trying to get off the ground. It was so heavy, it could barely get off the ground. It was flapping its wings, hopping from one leg to the other. He could see the dust and dirt kicking up on both sides of the road as it's flapping its wings, and finally it got up off the road and over the trees and gone. He was so curious, he went back the next day and measured the width of the road where he could see the wingtips. It was 21 feet across.
Yeah, I'd seen that, you know, from tip to tip, you know, what I've read was like at least 14 feet across. That's even a lot bigger, 21 feet, you know.
Right.
I heard of the cryptids, you know, like Bigfoot and Mothman and Dogman. I've never heard of the Thunderbird. I might have to start investigating that one, you know.
Well, there have been sightings. Again, it's not just in Pennsylvania. It's been going on all over the country and other areas as well with these huge flying creatures. And there's more to the Thunderbird categories, too. I mean, I've kind of marked them down under that title, but there's similarities in many reports, but there's variations, too. So you've got these huge, oversized, flying, giant birds. Then you've got another category where people swear they've seen these huge, featherless, leathery-skinned, like, giant bats that they've seen. There's been many reports like that. And then you've got people who, again, are even more hesitant to tell me that they swear they saw something that looked prehistoric, like a pterodactyl or pteratorn. And some of these were very, very detailed, close cases. And these are all cases where these people I interviewed, and others have interviewed some of these other witnesses too. They were very credible. Some of these were very educated people. They were very reluctant to tell me about it. Some of them were able to draw me some really good sketches of it, and that's interesting too. And then you've got some of the other weird reports that are a little different, but for example, we have what's become known as the Butler Gargoyle. And I don't know if you ever heard about the Butler Gargoyle or not. So that's an interesting case. I got to know that witness pretty well over the years. I mean, what he saw up in Butler County, where there's been a history of all kind of strange incidents for years and years. But anyhow, that creature, as he's riding down the road early morning hours, that was up around East Brady, up in that general area. What he saw, he said, was not a Bigfoot. He said, I've heard people talk about seeing a Bigfoot, but he said, that's not what this thing was. He said this thing was 8 foot tall, but it was actually covered with a kind of a smooth leather-like skin, kind of a dark tan or a light brown color. The head was kind of shaped like an aerodynamic helmet. The eyes were kind of swept back. He said the arms were very muscular and longer than that of a human, and they had claws. He said the legs were really unusual. They were extremely muscular legs, but they did not move like a human. They looked like they bent backwards, and he said it appeared to have wings on its back. The wing tips extended towards the side of its head. It took 3 big steps across the road and gone. And what's interesting was within a few days in that same general area, other witnesses reported to the local BORU research group, Dan Hagman, that they had seen the same kind of creature as well. So that's just another one of those anomalies we've dealt with. And there's many, many other types of strange creatures being reported year after year. There's some very interesting cases in the report that's on my website for last year, and there's a lot of other reports on the website as well.
I heard that the gargoyle was a little more aggressive towards humans.
Yeah, some people may use that terminology, the gargoyle. That's just the name some people have given this winged creature. There have been other type of reports, and of course we have the famous Mothman case from West Virginia back in 1966. But when you get into my creepy cryptid book, and probably haven't got that far yet, I remember during that time period, 1966, there were rumors around the greater Pittsburgh area that there was something, some type of similar creature being seen. I tried to track it down. I couldn't get any information on it. I heard these stories, and years later, I found a witness to one incident that apparently had happened in Allegheny County. Years later, I found another witness, and this story is told in my Creepy Cryptids book. It's a really amazing story. This was the best friend of the witness who was with his girlfriend when they had this encounter with this creature. And this fella was apparently in shock, and he came to this fella's home right after it happened. And he tells the whole story for the first time. And it is just an amazing account.
You're talking about the Mothman?
Yes, Mothman, yeah. And then you have other even stranger creatures I've dealt with too. So another incident is kind of interesting. This occurred, actually, this would be in August of 2017 in western Pennsylvania, and this was a police officer who had encountered this thing. He contacted me not long after it happened, and he was patrolling in a rural area that he commonly patrolled. He had no idea what this was that he saw. He was baffled by it, and I'm sure a little shaken, but he's riding down the road that evening. He sees this ball of light on the ground. So now we're not talking about the small spheres or orbs of light we talked about a few minutes ago. This is a little different. He sees this kind of a dull white ball of light, and he's thinking, I've never seen any type of artificial lighting like that before. So as he stops his vehicle, and suddenly this ball of light suddenly rises up from the ground. But then he realizes this ball of light is actually the head of a strange being about 6 feet or taller. And he said it was tall and it was skeletal thin. It was hairless. And he said he believed it was lying on the ground on its belly with its head towards the road when he first saw it. Then it stood up facing the road, and in the dark area he saw that the dull light from the glowing head illuminating the other section of the body. And he said as he watched this thing, it turned to the right, the dull illumination had again lit up the shoulders. The creature then turned, faced him, then turned to the left and took off at incredibly fast speed. He said, I've never seen anything move so fast in my life. He said, it was abnormally fast. And he said, I assume it ran. But he said, it was faster than anything I'd ever seen. It was there, and then it was gone. And actually, that's really interesting, because something we haven't got into is some of the very strange aspects of Bigfoot that I get into in the Creepy Cryptids book I've talked about many times. I've been uncovering since 1973 that there's more and more data suggesting that Bigfoot is much stranger than just an unknown creature.
I'll be right back with the rest of my conversation with Stan Gordon when we talk about Bigfoot and so much more after these messages.
Not feeling the popular music on mainstream radio today? Do you find yourself longing for the glory days of rock and roll? Well, we've got something for you. CLE Rocks is a podcast focused on rock and roll, the artists who defined it, the moments that shaped it, and the stories behind it all. And we're giving it to you from the city where rock and roll was born.
Hello, Cleveland!
CLE Rocks features interviews with music legends past and present. We explore the untold stories behind some of music's most memorable events, and we engage in lively debates that go far beyond the Beatles versus the Stones. Check out CLE Rocks with me, your host and music journalist, Troy Smith, straight from the birthplace of rock and roll.
I was going to just get back to Bigfoot for a second. You know, could you talk about the mini UFOs? I was going to get into like the baby Bigfoot. I had a story about 20 years ago. A friend of mine went camping up in Alaska. Group of men, three little baby Bigfoots went into each of the tents. I just never heard of the little Bigfoots. But he was telling me that it wasn't until that, like, this weird noise coming out of the woods. One of the men actually had one of the baby Bigfoots in his sights on his gun. And I believe he was going to shoot it, but the creature turned around, looked at him, and he couldn't shoot it. He says, like, in his words, you know, half human, half ape. Then when the tour guide picked him up a week later to get him off the island they were on, tour guide told him that that was cases that were similar to his coming out of that area.
And I can tell you, you know, here in Pennsylvania, I don't know if you've ever read my Silent Invasion book. It goes into great detail about the many, many very strange cases that happened during that 1973 UFO Bigfoot outbreak in Pennsylvania, which was the largest historically it ever happened. That's when I began to realize that we're dealing with something that's very, very strange. And the fact that there was some correlation between some of the UFO cases and Bigfoot at the time. But we had reports sometimes of some of these Bigfoot encounters were many in daylight, and we continue to have daylight reports. But there was some cases where there were more than one creature seen together. And even over the years, while many of the Bigfoot reports of people I've interviewed, these things are 6 to 9 feet tall generally, there are smaller ones being reported between about 4 and 5 feet tall as well. Uh-huh. So we've had that correlation as well. And also talking about the mini UFOs, the small spheres of light. Well, one of the other patterns, I've talked about this for years, and now it's going on more and more all over the country, in areas, especially in Pennsylvania and other parts of the country, but in areas where you have history of Bigfoot encounters, and there's some areas where you have more than normal type reports, more than normal activity being reported. Witnesses and investigators have reported seeing various type of light phenomena and these small spheres of light coming very close to them in recent years. And that's going on all over the country now as well.
Yeah, just like Mothman, you know, Mothman's just not in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. I mean, I'm getting stories from Mothman all around the world. I do have your book, The Silent Invasion, but I haven't got around to I get so many books. I picked that one up in your newest one, The Creepy Cryptids. Started The Creepy Cryptids first, and then I was going to do The Silent Invasions next.
You will like The Silent Invasion. It's completely different because it goes into great detail about the UFO reports, the UFO and Bigfoot cases, the mystery men that showed up in some of the cases afterwards, the government interest in the events. I mean, it's just an amazing book. And without going into the whole story, because we could spend hours talking about the one case, but the one story in there that's just amazing, and it's the one story that's been written up all over the world. It's probably the best documented case that shows there's some correlation, which we don't understand, between the UFO mystery and the Bigfoot phenomena. And even if I give you a brief summary here, I want your listeners to understand I am not trying to suggest that Bigfoot is piloting or a passenger in an extraterrestrial spacecraft. That's not what I'm saying, because we don't know for sure what the UFO phenomena really is. The more data that I have, the more I know, and after working on thousands of cases over many years, is that there may well be more than one origin to the unknown category of the UFO mystery. So maybe a small percentage may be extraterrestrial, but I think more and more, and this is what I'm finding with the Bigfoot and some other cryptid cases as well, that we're dealing with a phenomena that has a physical and a non-physical component to it. And for a lack of a better term, I'll say we're dealing with something that's interdimensional. But the one case, it's really detailed in the Silent Invasion book. There'll be a lot more than we have time to talk about. Probably this one of the strange, if not the strangest case ever documented. It was October 25th, 1973. And I remember it well. About 10:30 at night, I got a call from a state trooper from the Uniontown Barracks up in Fayette County. And he had just investigated this multiple witness UFO landing. And he called me and said, I think there's a good chance of something still up on the farm. Can you get a team up here as soon as you can? And we did. It was late at night. We assembled a team. We got our equipment, our radios, our radiation equipment, and other equipment, and headed up into Fayette County. Got there in early morning hours. I think we spent pretty much the whole night there. And what transpired during the night was amazing. But anyhow, the main part of the story was around 9 o'clock that night, you had 15 witnesses in that rural farming community that observed this barn-sized red sphere about 100 feet off the ground, hovering and slowly moving downward. I always concentrate on the farmer's son, who would be the adult in this case, the main adult involved in the trio involved. He was coming out to visit his family who had the farm. As he's riding down the farm road, he observes this object in the sky and people standing outside watching this thing, and it looks like it's slowly moving downward. So he goes to a neighbor's house to get a better view, and it looks like it's going to land on his dad's property. So there were two young boys in that farmhouse, and those two boys and this fellow decide they want to go up into the field and see what this thing is. They stop over his dad's farm. He grabs a .30-06 and a handful of ammunition. And within that ammunition, he had two tracer bullets. So those familiar with it, they know you just get that luminous trail when you fire the tracer bullet. Anyhow, as they're riding down the farm road, dogs around the area are going crazy. They're barking crazy. They hear this high-pitched whining noise and these baby crying sounds. They get closer to the pasture, and they angle their truck, and they leave the headlights on. Looks like something's draining the power from the headlights. They had never seen that before. They make their way up to the top of the hill to the pasture, and they're standing there looking across the field, and they're standing there in amazement. So here you have that object that was initially a big round sphere. Now it's like a half a sphere. It's like a big white dome, about 100 feet in diameter, kind of a flat bottom, right above the ground or on the ground. It's illuminating the whole area, making that high-pitched whining noise. And they just can't believe what they're seeing. And as they're watching this object, their eyes are focused on or are now focusing on an area about 75 feet away along a barbed wire fence. Because along that barbed wire fence are these two huge, tall, hair-covered creatures, one behind the other, very much like your typical Bigfoot. The one in front's about 8 feet tall. The one behind it's about 7 feet tall. They have a long, dark, matted hair hanging off the body. They have no neck. The eyes are about as big as a 50-cent piece, glowing, brilliant green. The arms are so long, they're extending past the knees almost down to the ground. And they're moving stiffly, one behind the other. The one in front would move to the next fence pole, and it make like a crying sound, and then it would move, and then the smaller one would move up to it. The one young boy was so frightened, he ran out of the field. The other one started yelling at the adult, shoot him, shoot him. So he takes his first shot, which was a tracer. He fired over their head. You got that luminous trail, and there was no reaction. But when he fired the next shot, which was the second tracer, something really intriguing happened. When he fired that tracer, the largest of the two creatures reaches out with his hand as though to grab the tracer, makes a loud whining, crying noise, and that object in the field vanished and was gone. It didn't take off. It just disappeared. At that point, the creatures turned around, started walking slowly along the fence line back towards the woods. The fella now was firing live ammo from his .30-06 into the creatures. There was no effect on them whatsoever. They ran back to the truck, went back to the farmhouse, told the family what happened, took them to a neighbor's and called the state police. When the troop arrived 45 minutes later, the witness said, look, just forget about it. You're going to think I'm crazy. And the trooper said, look, we had a report of two similar creatures up on the mountain the night before. I have to investigate it. So they went up with the police car up into the field to look for evidence. The short part of the story is the trooper told me when he arrived on the scene, the area where the object was on the ground was self-luminescent glowing, about 100 feet or more in diameter. He said the farm animals would not go into it. He said if he had a newspaper, he was pretty certain he could have sat down within that glow and read the newspaper coming off the glow. I was told he went back to the barracks. both the trooper and the witness were taken to two separate rooms, separately interviewed. Then they called me to set up my team. That's the short part of the story. And it's one of the most amazing cases ever documented.
I was asked a question a couple of years ago by a guest on. He asked me, did I think that Bigfoot and UFOs were connected? And I really didn't know how to answer the question. But the more and more stories I'm getting is like where a lot of these Bigfoot sightings are, you find also UFO sightings.
Well, I started writing about that back in the 70s. Now, more and more, all over the country, a lot of the things that I was finding, and I've found a lot more over the years now. As you get into the Creepy Cryptids book, you're going to get to read some of the very strange similarities and patterns I've found now over the years with the Bigfoot, the UFO phenomena. So here's one thing. One, in some of these cases, and remind me to tell you about the footprints, but some of these cases, these creatures, even in daylight, they look physically solid. But there's other cases where sometimes part of the body is solid, another part is not solid, or you can see through them, or it's out of focus, or they're kind of misty looking. We've had incidents, and I should probably tell you about the one case. It's just the other amazing case that stands out. It was the case that convinced me, among others, that we're dealing with something that is not a physical animal as we know it. If you'd like me, I'll tell you that story. But going back to the footprints, and you'll read about this in the Silent Invasion book, there were many incidents where my team or myself were on the scene of an incident within minutes to hours after it occurred, all year round in different weather conditions, including snow. These large, unusual footprints with big strides between them that went for a distance and just suddenly abruptly stopped and there was no more tracks. There is no explanation for it. There's no way that could have been fabricated. That's been going on for years and years now, not only in Pennsylvania, but all around the country. Other researchers and other witnesses are reporting the same thing. That's amazing stuff. But anyhow, it was February 6, 1974, way up in the mountains, southwest Pennsylvania. Now, I don't know how old you are, but you may remember, some of your listeners as well, the time period. There was a big national trucker strike. There was gas rationing across the country, including Pennsylvania. There was some problems going on with the highways with the strike. There was some things going on, so the state police and the National Guard were patrolling together. So they both responded to this incident. I couldn't get gas in Greensburg, so I couldn't get up there till early the next morning. Anyhow, the story is this woman lived way deep in the mountains in this little cabin home. She lived there all her life. She knew animals very well. She was a very good shot. She was sitting there watching TV as a normal night. She began to hear this commotion, this noise on her little front porch. She had a number of empty soda cans, pop cans out there, and something was knocking the pop cans around. Well, she told me, she said, 2 weeks before there was a pack of wild dogs came through, and she said, I just thought in my head, I bet those dogs are back, so I'll grab my 16-gauge double-barrel shotgun, and I'll load one chamber, and I'll go shoot over the head and scare those dogs away, which is what she ended up doing. She loads one chamber of a shotgun. She gets up and starts walking. She's walking towards the front door. She opens up the door, turns on the switch for the light outside, steps out, but there's no dogs there. But 6 feet in front of her is this huge 7 foot tall hair covered Bigfoot that as soon as she turned the lights on, it put its arm straight up over its head. And how does she react? She pulls the trigger. She fires right into it. She said there's this bright flash of light like the flash on a camera, and that creature vanished right in front of her and was gone. But her in-laws lived 100 feet away, and they heard the shot, and they called and asked what she was shooting at. Her son-in-law grabs his sidearm, starts walking down that dark road. Around that time, he reportedly encountered four or five hairy people with eyes like coals of fire, started shooting at him randomly, and it was around that time that there was a large luminous object like a big Christmas ornament hovering over the woods at the same time. That's when they called the state police. And I talked to the investigating officer, and he said by the time they got up there, it took them quite a while to find the place. Whatever was going on was over, but he said something very strange did occur up there. He said the witnesses were very, very shaken. They were very honest. They were very detailed. But he said, based on what he experienced, was the animal reactions. And that's something that I have seen myself. I hear this over and over again, including in the last year, from witnesses with the Bigfoot and their animals, how they react when these creatures were close by. Over the years, even reports, even the most vicious dogs, when they're in close proximity to these creatures, very often they will not bark, they'll just stand still, they shake, they cower. Sometimes they won't eat properly for another day or two or three. That's very common. He said when they got up the scene, they had several big dogs up there. The dogs wouldn't make a sound. other animals were spooked. He said something very strange happened up there. That was the case, among others, that convinced me we're dealing with something other than a flesh and blood animal.
I'm going to put all your links on the bottom of this episode. Now, I thank you for coming on today. But before I get off here, I was just thinking, getting back to that Kecksburg UFO crash, you said before it crashed, it went over to these counties, including your town, Greensburg. Just think back then, you're probably just a little boy that might have went over your house.
Well, I was 16 when it happened, and it wouldn't have gone over my house, but it wouldn't have been too far away. I probably would have been able to see if I was looking the right direction, but I wasn't not looking there that day. And that was a very, very interesting case. There's a lot more to that case. My documentary, Kecksburg, The Untold Story, is still available on Amazon.com. You can still get it on DVD. I'm pretty sure now you can also view it through UFO video online. It's very long. You know, it's 92 minutes long. It's very, very detailed. There's information on there you won't see anywhere else. And I've learned since I did that documentary, I've interviewed many, many other witnesses. There's a lot more to the story. We could talk for hours and hours about the Kecksburg case, and there's a lot of intriguing aspects to it, I can tell you.
Maybe a documentary number two.
I don't know if that's going to happen now, but fortunately, so many of the witnesses are now way up in age, or many have passed away.
Well, I want to thank you for autographing my copy I got off you last year, but I will put all the links at the bottom of this episode, and I want to thank you very much for coming on the show.
All right, Al. Well, thanks for having me on again, and maybe we'll see you again at the Kecksburg UFO Festival this year in July. I'm already getting many requests to do lectures and programs, so I'll be in a lot of places. If all goes well throughout the year, they can keep checking my website, stangordon.info, for information on some of the programs I'll be doing in different locations. I know I have a lot of them for the greater Pittsburgh area and southwest PA and other areas. I'll be at the Kecksburg UFO Festival. Festival this year is July 21st, Friday night, 22nd, Saturday, and the conference is on Sunday the 23rd. And that's in Kecksburg, PA, and there'll be light information later on. It's way too early in the year, but we're just getting things developed right now. Keep checking my website. There are other Bigfoot festivals and other paranormal events being planned here in western Pennsylvania over the next several months. So some of them will be coming up. They're still getting locations and setting dates, but there are different events being planned right now.
All right, Stan. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
All right, Al. Thanks again for having me on.
Thank you, Stan Gordon. That was a fantastic interview. I encourage you all to go to the Kecksburg UFO Festival in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. Check the dates at the bottom of this episode. His links, his books. I'm your host, Al Cooley. I'll see you in 2 weeks with another great episode of Ghosts in the Valley podcast.